Avery's desk always looked about to disappear under a mound of paper and ranks of liquor bottles. He'd stuck slim candles into bottle mouths, some burned down and others pristine, though I never saw a burning one. If he ever lit them up, it was probably when he was alone. Cops aren't supposed to drink on duty, but exorcists get a little bit of leeway. However, Ave didn't immediately reach for the mini-fridge under his desk to get me a beer, and that was odd. Here, at the very bottom of the building housing the downtown jail, the long corridor terminated in Ave's office and three rooms barred with cold iron. Each one had a circle carved into the concrete floor to hold victims hosting a possessor, or those who had been cleaned out but had to be protected from the demon coming back to crawl right in and set up housekeeping.
This is seriously weird.
Avery handed over the file.
What's weird? Where's our boy?
He's a winner in room one. Didn't flinch at the circle or anything. I didn't even know he was awake until I peeked in the porthole about an hour ago when I finally got the file all together. There's some headshots in there, too. He has a record.
A couple of drug arrests, one breaking and entering, dismissed with time served, and nothing for the last 3 years. Emilio Ricardo, 36, brown and brown, employed halfway across town at a Mexican restaurant. Avery, bless his thoroughgoing little heart, had even pulled his recent renewal of a food handler's card. Huh.
Yeah. The address on his food permit isn't the place on Silverado where I found him. It just tingled too funny. I got called in by a patrol car. They'd gone in for a domestic disturbance in the same apartment building and ended up hearing this guy screaming. Couldn't break the door down, and one of them, Jughead Vanner, you know, blonde kid, looks like an advertisement for Clairol, radioed me in. He said it made him feel hanky.
Poor Jughead. You know he came across a traitor a couple months ago?
He told me. Not in so many words, but he wanted nothing to do with anything weird. I had to jiggle the door to get it open, and the Vic tried to cold-cock me when I stepped in. I returned the favor. We tussled, and I knocked him out.
Where was he when you came in? Right next to the door?
Guess so. Why?
No reason. So he's been quiet?
As a mouse. Something wrong, Jill?
Not yet, but this is strange. I'll peek in on him, then I got a couple other things to do. Can you hold him for a bit?
All things should be so easy. It's been quiet on the exorcism front.
Yeah, I haven't pulled something out of someone for at least 2 weeks before this.
No rest for the wicked. Want to take a look? Eve and I are going out for beers after I get off shift. About 20 minutes.
You've been spending a lot of time with her. Yeah, speaking of Eva, how's Benito? And Wallace? Is Benny's leg okay?
Oh yeah. It itches like hell under that cast, but he's all right. Says he feels more stupid than anything else.
Avery pointedly didn't mention Eva again.
Is he blushing?
I stared at him, my jaw threatening to drop. Ave's got a sleepy smile and big brown eyes, both of which draw women like honey. They don't stay. Girls don't like it when their man spends his night somewhere else, even if it's with possessed people. And Avery never makes much of an effort to keep them either. But he and Eva had been hanging out an awful lot lately. She's smart, tough, and a capable exorcist, even if she'd never make a hunter. Both Benito and Wallace have a little sister thing going for her, and she handles it as gracefully as any woman in a predominantly male field does. That is, with a smart mouth and twice the moxie of any mere man. I swallowed the smile, struggling to rise to my face.
Serves Benito right, taking on an exorcism plus like that without calling me.
Yeah, well, none of us want to call you without reason.
I know. Better to call you without need than to need you and not call.
I put the file under my arm and stepped up to the first door, my back itching a little because it was to the hallway. Only one entrance and one exit to any exorcist's lair. Getting trapped is a risk we'll take. Letting a possessor or a victim escape without being cleaned out,
isn't. The door had a small reinforced porthole. Even this aperture was barred with cold iron, blue light running under its pitted, rusting surface. Reinforcing the protections on a space like this was an everyday, every other day job at most. Some exorcists do it twice a day, even. Considering the alternative, I don't blame them. Emilio Ricardo crouched in the center of the circle scored in the concrete floor, rocking back and forth. He was hugging himself, and the rags of his shirt fluttered. The restraints lay in a corner, a jumble of leather straps. Did you untie him?
Yeah. Figured he was gonna be in there a while. I'll trank him through the door if we need to take him out for a walk. I got a bad feeling about this, Kiz.
Don't call me that. I shut my dumb right eye and peered through the porthole again, concentrating. There was only a slight fading quiver of the unnatural around Ricardo. He was just keening, probably in psychological shock. Either that, or...
Huh.
I hate it when you say that.
I looked closer, my smart eye dry and buzzing. Lingering cheesecloth veils hung around him, pulsing every time he took a breath. It looked like he was fighting free of the contamination, though contamination isn't the right word when it comes to voodoo or any of her cousins. He was definitely struggling with the mental and emotional damage done by having something inhuman use your body as a hotel room, or getting that something violently evicted. It didn't look like the regular event of a Loa or a Risa riding a horse. The bargains that priests and priestesses make with those spirits are well defined on both sides, and initiation into the secrets of any voodoo-esque branch carries a protection against unwanted possession, as well as methods of doing it safely. If any possession can be called safe. They're jealous of their followers, those spirits. I learned as much doing a residency, working the voodoo beat in New Orleans. Now that had been an education. Just goes to show there's always something more you can learn, even as a hunter. I closed the porthole.
Has he eaten anything?
None yet. I slide the food in. He doesn't touch it.
I do not like this. I'm gonna ask some questions. Hopefully I... Jesus. When it rains, it pours.
You say that a lot.
I checked the pager. It's Galena again. Which meant I had to get over there. It wasn't like her to buzz right after I'd visited her unless something was going on. Usually, she'll just wait for me to drop by every couple of weeks, figuring I have other irons in the fire.
Avery, be careful. I'm not exactly sure what's going on here. And until I am, I don't want him going anywhere. Okay?
Okay. Say hi to Saul for me, will you?
I will. Say hi to Eva for us.
Go fuck yourself, Kizman.
Outside the jail, the Pontiac was parked in a fire lane, Saul leaning against the front left quarter panel and smoking. The street lamp shine of just past dark was kind, and I stopped on the steps for a moment, just taking a good look at him. A tall, dark man, silver in his short black hair, jeans and combat boots, and a black t-shirt, broad-shouldered and lean-hipped. And almost too delicious to be real. Wares are generally striking, if not beautiful. They just look more finished than regular humans. He was studying the street, presenting me with a three-quarter profile, hard-edged as a statue. There were dark circles under his eyes, I noticed, and his mouth was drawn tight. His shoulders were hunched in a way I'd never seen before. He looked tired.
Well, his mom just died. Leave it alone, Jill. Be supportive. Galena, again. Fuckity.
What's up?
Galena's buzzing. Twice. I should get over there. Avery says hi, by the way. I think he and Eva are dating.
Uh-huh.
I can drop you off at home.
What? You don't want me to go alone?
Of course I do. You just look a little under the weather, that's all.
I'm fine.
Saul. Oh, God damn it. Saul.
I'm fine. If that's Galena, we'd better hurry.
Is that you actually telling me to drive fast?
Christ, when do you not drive fast, kitten?
Galena's shop windows shone with featureless yellow light behind paper-thin blinds. The telephone poles marching alongside the road in this part of town were festooned with placards. Looking at the one right next to the car, I saw a huge painted poster stapled over the weathered drift of concert announcements and nudie bar placards.
Come to the circus.
Art Deco flowers festooned the edges, and in the middle was a grinning clown's face, deep lines in its paint, leering at the street. A suggestion of fangs touched the greased lower lip, and the clown's eyebrows came up to high peaks. A dusting of corruption lay over the paper, visible only to my blue eye. There was no address.
Of course, the people who want to will find it. That's the way it works.
My mouth went dry.
Jeez.
Saul barely gave the poster a glance. A shadow moved in the plate glass front of the shop across the street. I eased a gun free of the holster. Saul's dark eyes flicked to the gun in my hand, and he straightened infinitesimally before stepping out into the road. He followed, two steps behind and to my left, carefully out of the way, but close enough if I should need him. The blinds twitched, and one moved aside slightly. The shape in the window was Galena, her Marcel-waved hair and immaculate cap as always. Her green eyes sparked as the sheet of etheric energy folding over her shop changed slightly, like light refracting through a waterfall. Even my dumb eye could see the reverberations, watering and tingling. The scar prickled.
She looks worried.
No shit.
Thank God.
Galena was in her robes, the pigeon throat gray shifting, and the mark of the order at her throat. A silver medallion, the quartered circle inside a serpent's hoop, a snake eating its own tail. I gave the shop a quick glance, nothing visible. I relaxed fractionally, didn't reholster the gun. Something was off here.
You won't need that, Jill. I've got everything we need.
Is it her?
I pitched forward, rolled, and gained my feet in a single convulsive movement, and ended up with my gun pointed straight at a very familiar-looking breed. The ringmaster held his cane like a staff. The crystal at its head spit a venomous green spark as he stood next to the cash register. His eyes ran with wet orange hellfire. His hair was lifting on a slight breeze from nowhere, standing up in wet black spikes. This time, he was in a battered red velvet coat and actual joppers. He looked like he belonged on a carton of animal crackers.
A really twisted, ugly carton, sopping with blood and other nasty liquids.
We came to this town in good faith, Hunter.
The faint lines on the ridge of bone masquerading his teeth were grimed with something dark.
We came to cleanse and to—
Stand down! This is a sanctuary. Calm the fuck down.
Stop it, both of you. Henri, stand over there, or I will send you back to hell. I'm not joking.
She isn't, you know.
I hadn't noticed Perry. He stood with his back to the rest of us, bending down to peer inside a glass display case that held several crystal balls, mummified alligators, and a stacked display of Aetela tarot cards. Something rippled on his back. Under the white linen suit jacket.
I suggest you calm yourself.
What the hell's going on?
I didn't lower the gun, and Galena's walls ran with rivulets of etheric force, cascading in sheets.
Galena?
Stand over there, Henri.
The ringmaster grudgingly paced to the exact spot she pointed to on the floor, his thin body twitching with mutiny. His hair actually writhed for a moment, the spikes rubbing against each other. The fraying nap of his red velvet coat crawled with corruption dust, and his fingers twisted and twitched. Galena gave me a meaningful look. I holstered the gun.
How about someone gives me a vow?
We are in a very special place right now, Kismet. Let us absorb the full implications.
Where have you been, Hunter? We came here in good faith.
I've been chasing a child killer and doing exorcisms. More than enough fun and games to keep me busy.
Whatever's happened to you, I'm not involved with it. Yet.
There has been an attack.
Perry finally turned, slowly. And it was almost a relief to see him still wearing his blonde, bland face. He was also grinning, lips pulled back in a rictus and his eyes burning gas flame blue. There was no indigo spreading and scarring the whites, though. That was good news.
How good remains to be seen. What kind of attack?
A circ performer, my dear. A certain fortune teller appears to have gone to collect her eternal reward. With some help, I might add.
You're kidding.
You see? I vouch for her shock, brother. My kismet is altogether too intelligent for such a blatant act.
Oh, shut up, Hyperion. You will swear you had no part in this, Hunter?
For Christ's sake. The hostage is your good behavior. Why the hell would I want to attack any of your people, other than their being Hellbreed? Which is enough reason to seriously tempt me.
The Ringmaster's eyes flicked toward Perry, who pursed his lips. A number of things occurred to me just then, and I actually had to stuff my tongue into my cheek and bite down to keep from making a snarky comment.
All right. This is the first I've heard about an attack on the Circ, which I consider just as bad news for me as it is for you. I give you my word, I have nothing to do with it. But I'm about to.
My pulse smoothed out a little bit more, and my eyes skipped between the two breed, each of them vibrating with barely controlled rage. Perry hid it better, but I've been around him too much for too long to trust his outward appearance.
I've got some business to transact with my sanctuary here. Then I'll be out at the Circ to take a look at what's going on. I'll find out who's behind this and take appropriate action. In the meantime, you'll keep your noses clean. Perry, you'll meet me at the Circ.
I do not
I think it's best, don't you? So nobody is tempted to run amok while my dear Kiss is on the scene. It would be so embarrassing to have a hunter become justified in killing a few more of your performers.
Perry didn't look at the other breed. Instead, he was staring at me like he was hungry and I was a bowl of lunch.
I wish I could say I don't know that look. But men have been giving it to me all my life.
The other breed stared at me, pumpkin hellfire flickering in his irises. I was suddenly glad we were inside Galena's shop. If he moved on me, she'd drop him. Or more precisely, the sanctuary warding on the walls would. If all else failed, it would give me enough time to put a few silver jacket slugs in him.
And maybe sink a knife right into one of those orange glowing eyes.
If I find that you are indeed involved in this unfortunate event...
The Ringmaster twirled his cane smartly, the crystal cleaving, unresisting air. That's the trouble with this job. It's full of threats, both veiled and naked. After a while, it gets ho-hum. Except when you're dealing with Hell's Scions. The slippery, twisting, twitchy bastards threaten all the time, and they'll get away with what they can.
I sure hope that wasn't a threat, because for a member of the Cirque de Charnu to threaten a resident hunter is exceeding bad taste, not to mention stupid, and dangerous, and—
That's it, Jill.
Galena stepped forward just as the Ringmaster did, a synchronized movement that would have been funny if the Hellbreed hadn't been boiling like a steam kettle.
Both Perry and I vouch for our hunter's innocence. Go back to your home and wait. You've said and done enough here.
Our hunter?
A pucker of hot liquid prickling filled the scar. The bottom dropped out of my stomach. Perry grinned like he had just gotten a Christmas present full of snackable entrails. Galena, however, didn't notice anything.
Great.
The tension rose another notch as the Ringmaster paced toward me, and I realized he would have to pass very close to get out the front door. I stepped aside. So did Saul. And I did my best to keep myself between him and the breed. My hands literally itched for a weapon. The Ringmaster halted. I caught a whiff of sawdust and glitter, spice and fried food, with the faint thunderous note of rotting underneath. The edges of his red frock coat twitched, as if tiny insect feet were stabbing the threadbare crimson velvet from underneath. Then he continued.
Now you, Perry. I've business to transact with Jill.
What if I do too, Galena? Have business with my hunter.
Perry.
Galena's eyes turned incandescent. The silver at her throat sparked, a clean springtime green swirling at the surface of the metal.
It would be undignified to be tossed out of here on your ass.
True. I bid you a civil adieu, then, ladies.
A wink and a flash of pearly teeth between Perry's bloodless lips. He slid past me like a burning wind.
He never was one for a discreet exit. So, someone's looking to kill Cirque performers?
Or they have a deeper plan, and they're going to try to pin anything that happens on you. I don't like this.
Galena studied me, a line between her dark eyebrows. She was pale and shaking just the slightest bit. I stared, willing the pattern to come clear, and finally blinked it away when it refused. Hunters always become full-blown psychics before the end of their apprenticeships. Damn useful when dealing with the night side. But sometimes, intuition won't tell you anything. It'll just muddy the waters.
Oh, Christ, Galena. Drop the other shoe already, and get me some more ammo. I've got a bad feeling about this.
You could find just about anything a serious practitioner needed at Galena's. And if your credit was good, you could get a whole lot more. A neutral supply of necessities for all concerned is the least of the services a sanctuary provides to a city's nightside inhabitants. She poured us tea up in her kitchen. The night pressed against the bay window over the sink, the green bank of herbs and a cast iron shelving unit stirring slightly. Sanks like growing things. They are gentle souls, really. It's a shame so few people pass their entrance exams. Sanks don't go outside much. It's the price they pay for being almost godlike inside their nice, thick defenses. Galena set the tray of silver jacket ammo down on the butcher block table.
What do you know about the last time the Cirque was here?
It was the hunter before Mikhail. I know he told them not to come back until he wasn't the hunter here. Bad blood between him and the last ringmaster. Or is that the same one?
It's the same one.
It was really strange to see her so pale. Not much disturbs Galena's serenity.
He's been controlling the Cirque for a few generations, which means he's nasty and smart. And with that goddamn cane of his... The last time, there was some trouble. The hunter before Mikhail was Emerson Sloan. He had a sort of apprentice. Everything went sideways.
Sort of apprentice? Well, that doesn't happen. But there are wannabes in this business, just the same as any other. Fucking amateurs trying to get themselves killed, since they're unfit for the job one way or another. Or they'd be trained.
Mikhail never told me about that.
He wasn't an actual apprentice. He just kept following Sloan around until Sloan gave up and began training him.
That's how it usually starts.
My own apprenticeship hadn't begun that way. But Mikhail had been an exception all over. And so, I suppose, was I.
And if I'm lucky, Gilberto will have vanished off my front step by the time I get home.
He got into trouble. There were some problems.
What type of problems?
I didn't hear much. Sloan never opened up about it. I do know the kid ended up dead after something terrible.
And no word on what something terrible entailed? Did it have to do with the Cirque, or...
I just don't know, Jill. The ringmaster seemed to think you had a hand in this attack, and he was excited when he showed up. Perry was right behind him.
God damn it. I'll just bet he was, with his little fingers in the pie as usual.
What can you tell me about this trouble, Galena?
Not much that I can recall. It had to do with the apprentice and a woman over near Greenlee, I think. Back when that part of town wasn't very nice. Had to be, around 1926 or so. Before the barrio moved. Before the big outbreak. And before all that new money moved in and turned it into a shopping district. The kid, there was something about him. I can't remember. I'll dig through my diaries, see if I can suss it out.
It's not like you to have a bad memory.
When you've put in almost a century of tending a sanctuary, Jill, then we'll talk. Mikhail and Sloane both liked things close to the vest. Most of the time, I didn't have a clue what either of them were up to.
Misha was a private person, all right. I didn't hear much about the former hunter either, except that Sloane wasn't of our lineage. He was part of Ben Cross's crowd.
Yeah. Sloane died after the outbreak in 1929. We were in a freefall for years. It was a bad time for any hunter.
Yeah. The second biggest demonic outbreak of the past century. 1929 was a bad year for hunters all over the United States, and it got exponentially worse in Europe 10 years later. So much of what was unleashed during the two decades after 29 is still out running around. It's like the Middle Ages all over again, only this time, we have more firepower to put things down. Still, the firepower's no good without people trained to use it. And quality apprentices are few and far between. I thought again of Gilberto, and hoped he was gone by the time I got home.
Which might not be soon.
This had all the makings of a complex situation, which meant a lot of blood and screaming, not to mention gunfire and ugliness.
Oh, Gregory. That was the kid's name. Something Gregory. I'll look through my diaries.
I'd appreciate it, Galena. And I really have to get over to Greenlee now that you mention it. I've got business there. Hey, has anyone been in to buy voodoo stuff lately? Anyone making a big, serious purchase?
No. I don't do much voodoo or Santeria here. That's more Mama Zamba, on the edge of the barrio. Or Melendez. I sometimes send people to either of them. I wonder...
I hate going to either of them. Jesus. Well, give old Zamba a call as soon as I leave. Let her know I've got a few questions. It's about time I went and scared her again. I fished a single bill out of my pocket. And this 50's all I've got on me for this load of ammo. I'll take care of the rest when I get my municipal check, okay?
You can put it on account, you know. Jill, are you sure you want to go out to the Cirque?
I'll go where I have to. It's just a bunch of hellbreed playing games. Nothing I haven't seen before.
I really hope you don't mean that.
It wasn't like Galena not to get the last word in, so I left it at that. Of course they would settle near the train yards, far north of my warehouse, and on the fringes of the industrial section. A cold night wind came off the river, laden with flat, iron chemical scent. It was usually a space of empty, weed-strewn lots, a few squares of concrete left over from trailers or something, and a festooning of hypodermics and debris from when it used to be a shackville. The homeless were rousted out during a huge urban renewal drive 5 years ago, but the drive petered out, and the fencing around the lots turned that bleached color everything gets after a winter or two in the desert. Now it was cleaned up. The fencing was taken down in some parts, replaced in others, and it was starred with lights. Everyone who told me about the Cirque was right. It does look bigger than its sorry little caravan would ever lead you to dream of. It sprawled like a blousy drunk on a tattered divan, cheap paste jewels glittering. Cirque de Charnoux, the painted boards on the fence barked. The big top was up, canvas daubed with leering clown faces and swirls of watery glitter, the smell of fried food mixed uneasily with the blood tang of the river. And I caught the undertone of sweat and animal manure, too. A Ferris wheel I would have sworn wasn't part of the caravan spun like a confection of whipped cream and glass. Its winking lights were like sterile eyes staring into the night. We sat on the hood of the Pontiac, overlooking the spectacle. There was a footpath down the embankment leading to the temporary parking lot, already full of vehicles. Little dust devils danced between the neat rows. The fringes of contamination and corruption were thin, flabby fingers poking at each tire and dashboard. Saul was smoking again, cherry tobacco smoke drifting off in the breeze. The tiny bottle of holy water on a chain around his neck swirled with faint blue.
Smells like a trap.
It is. A trap for the weak or unwary. Or just for those who don't care anymore. You sure you want to come with me? A shadow crossed Saul's face.
He tapped the ash from the cigarette with a quick, angry motion. I glanced quickly away, over the carnival. The Ferris wheel halted, its car swinging and trembling slightly, like leaves in a soft breeze. Its gaunt gantry looked hungry, and a couple lights flickered on the verge of going out.
You realize we can't interfere down there. Once we step through the gate...
I know the rules. You repeated them twice. I'm not stupid, Jill.
You're right. You're not stupid. Maybe I am.
Saul finished his cigarette, flicked it away. I eyed the layout again as we made our way down the hill. The alleys between the tents looked regular and even, but they also ran like ink on wet paper in the corner of my vision. I had the idea that if I looked away, they would move and snap back together in a different configuration once my gaze returned. Between the rows of cars, windshields already filmed with dust, gravel shifting under our feet, there was no need to be quiet. There wasn't much of a crowd milling around the ticket booth. The scattered people were mostly normal, and they looked dazed. I kept my mouth shut, watching for a few moments as a round brunette in her mid-30s tilted her head, listening to the music. She stepped up to the booth and handed over a fistful of something. It looked like wet pennies. And the trader manning the booth, female, heart-shaped face and short black Betty Page bangs, big dark eyes and a pair of needle-sharp fangs dimpling her candy-red lower lip, made a complex gesture, then stamped the woman's hand and waved her past. We strode through the confused, each of them averting their eyes like we were some sort of plague. A couple traders milled with the normals, uncertainly. Most of them flinched and drew into the shadows when they saw me. The trader in the booth studied us. She opened her mouth, and I saw all her teeth were sharp and pointed, not just the fangs.
I'm here on business, trader. Where's the ringmaster?
Around and about, probably in the big top. Want your hand stamped?
Of course not. Come on, Saul.
I took two steps to the side, heading for the turnstile.
Just what are you...
She froze, mouth open as I turned to stare at her. The corruption blooming over her was strong. And I'd bet diamonds she had weapons under the sightline of the flimsy booth.
You can come in, but I'm not so sure he can.
Oh, yeah? You got a problem with my wear, bitch? He's with me. Go back to seducing suicides.
We strode past the booth and up to the turnstile. Each separate bar of the stile ended in a cheap chrome ram's head, lips drawn back and blunt teeth blackened with grime. The swirl of corruption lying over the entire complex of canvas and wood tightened.
The spider knows the fly's home.
I didn't like that thought. I also didn't like how the air was suddenly close and warm. Almost balmy with a slight edge of humidity. It even smelled wrong. No clean tang of dry desert, no metallic ring from the river or any of the 100 other little components that make up a subconscious map of my city. You spend enough time breathing a place and it'll get into your bones. And when it isn't what it should be, that's when the uneasiness starts right below the hackles. It was also, surprise, surprise, more crowded inside than out. There wasn't a crush, but it was work threading my way through. The flat shine of the dusted on trader irises. Dazed incomprehension on the shuffling normals rubbing shoulders. I saw men in pajamas, a woman in filmy lingerie with her hair in pink curlers. A 50-ish man in work clothes, carrying a dripping wet hammer. And wandering wall-eyed and fish-mouthed like he was six again. The midway bloomed around us. Pasteboard and flashing lights. Strings of electric bulbs.
Throw the ball, win a prize!
I spotted an actual breed. Female in a red cotton peasant dress. A sleepy-eyed teenager stopped in front of her. She licked her pale lips and smiled at him. Her white, white hands touched his shoulders in a butterfly's caress, but she saw me watching and pushed him aside. He stumbled and rejoined the flow of the crowd.
Step right up and catch a fish!
A traitor in suspenders, a white wife beater, and a newsboy hat, his ears coming to high, hairy points, motioned at a crystal bowl. The fish inside glittered too sharply to be anything but metallic, globules of clear oil bubbling from their mouths.
Win a dream! A lovely dream! Freshly colored! Catch a fish! Step right up!
A woman hesitated before putting her hand in the bowl.
Don't do it. Please don't.
I turned away before she could make her decision.
Everyone's a winner!
My stomach turned over. This was what the Cirque did. It separated the weak and suicidal from the just vaguely disaffected. I caught sight of a young woman, mascara dribbling down her cheeks on a flood of tears, twirling around to the sound of the calliope. She shivered and walked slowly toward an open tent.
God alone knows what's waiting for her in there.
The normals didn't look at me. They were lost in the spectacle. But the traitors flinched aside. And the breed sometimes showed their teeth or fangs. One, dolled up like a fortune teller and outside a tent swathed with fluttering nylon scarves, a chipped crystal ball on the round satin-draped table in front of her, was especially unhappy to see me. I stopped and stared at her, unblinking, until she dropped her yellow gaze. Her eyes matched her tongue, a jaundiced, scaled thing that flickered past thin lips and dabbed the point of her chin before reeling back into her mouth. Saul kept close, the comforting heat of him touching my back. The silver in my hair was shifting, and the carved ruby at my throat spat a single bloody spark.
There's a lot of them.
There always are. When the sun rises, maybe a third of them will make it home safe. Those who decide they want to live after all. Or those smart enough to run like hell and make no agreements. Even implicit ones.
And here I had thought I was such a cynic. Fact was, probably a lot less than a third would get home. Lean, four-legged shapes slunk in the shadows. Their colorless eyes flashed, and they followed us through the midway. The Ferris wheel rocked at one end. Another light winked out. The entrance to the big top was huge, easily as big as a triple garage door. Oiled canvas rubbed against the ropes. Tattered pennants hung on seven high-peaked poles. A gangling scarecrow of a male hellbreed lolled in a chair next to a post, holding one end of the tattered red velvet rope barring the way. His top hat was pulled down over his eyes, and his spider-like fingers, six on each hand, and a thumb, too, bones and tendons flickering under the mottled skin, twitched as I halted. Threadbare, skin-tight burlap pants strained every time a skinny leg moved. His biceps were so thin, I could probably have spanned them with thumb and forefinger. For all that, it was a hellbreed. And usually, they aren't so flagrantly unhuman. Usually, they're beautiful. And they like to show it. Except Perry. This one could be a surprise, too. I stepped forward and eyed him. The hat lifted a little, and mad silvery eyes gleamed under a hank of silky dirt-dark hair. The fingers twitched again. I held the breed's gaze as the hounds, slinking in the shadows, drew nearer. Saul didn't make a restless movement, but I could guess maybe he wanted to. Cut the act. Get me the ringmaster. The breed tipped his head back further, a pointed chin, hollow cheeks. He was a walking skeleton with mottled skin stretched drum-tight over bones. And I suddenly knew what he was. The knowledge made my hands ache for a weapon again. I controlled the urge.
Are you sure you want to see him? He's not in a good mood.
The breed smirked, pointed yellow teeth flashing for just a moment. Strings of thick saliva bubbled behind his lips. I was almost sorry I'd eaten. Snap inspection, plague bearer. And the mood you should be worrying about right now is mine. I'm giving you less than 2 seconds to haul that skinny ass of yours up, and less than 10 to bring me the ringmaster.
or I start shooting Breed and traitors. Your choice.
It was a nice bluff. Technically, a hunter can snap inspect any part of the circ at any time and serve summary judgment on any Breed or traitor caught breaking the rules. For example, pressuring a victim into making a bargain, or in my city, playing with anyone under 18. That's pretty much why the circ obeys the strictures. First, there's the hostage, and then there's us, swallowing bile and watching, waiting for them to step out of line. Of course, people vanish all the time. It's a goddamn epidemic. And whenever the circ finally leaves town, there's a lull in exorcisms, disappearances, and other nastiness. They eat all they can hold in each town, I guess. And with the picking so easy once the calliope starts singing, they would be foolish to take any unwilling meat. Hellbreed aren't fools. The Breed jolted to his feet, elbows and knees moving in ways human joints weren't designed to, and I almost twitched toward a gun. But he just capered over the red velvet rope and into the big top, leaving his chair rocking back and forth, a bloom of powdery yellow dust left behind, eating little holes in the painted wood.
Plague bear.
You don't want to touch that stuff. My nerves were scraped raw, my back crawling with the thought of so many of Hell's citizens in one place, a cancer in the middle of my vulnerable city. My apprentice ring cooled, turning to ice on my finger. It twitched, sharply, twice. It was the first time since I'd met the circ outside town that it had made any sort of motion at all. I spun on my heel and leapt into a run. I didn't have to look back to know that Saul was right behind me. The big top blurred past on one side, yards and yards of canvas. It drew away like a wave threatening to crest, and I plunged into a network of tents and alleys half lit. Here was one of the older parts of the carnival. The air was thick with a reek of spilled sex, and the tent flaps were always half open. Traders with gem-bright eyes, Hellbreed with seashell hips and candied mouths, lounged in the entrances to their tents, seducing and beckoning. I veered off to the left, my apprentice ring pulling like a fish on a thin line. The tents gave way to trailers, and I passed the limousine sitting still and polished under a rigged-up canvas canopy. The headlights flickered once, green as I flashed past. A huge silver airstream stood before me, calling out to the ring. I fell into a crouch, etheric force surging through the scar and filling my veins with sick heat. I left the ground, my leg outstretched before me. The airstream's door crumpled, exploding inwards. A terrible, sour sewer smell puffed past me. The trailer was small, and every surface inside was crawling. Little bits of darkness moved. Fluttering, chitinous legs and wings twitched as the roaches spilled over every surface. A pinprick of laser red light glowed on the back of every goddamn insect, and they startled into flight. The tide of insect life streamed past me, little hairy legs touching and brushing.
Chew!
Saul's warning told me not to worry about the inside of the trailer just at the moment. I threw myself back and down, landing hard on the two portable wooden steps leading up to the crumpled door. I saw the flash of the crystal knob atop the ringmaster's cane as he passed through the air over me. My silver jacket bullet bounced off or past it, ricocheting into the side of his leering face, sending the hat flying from his head. He dropped straight down. My knees jerked up, and I rolled backward down the steps, made a lunging, fish-like twist, and was suddenly irrationally on my feet. The whip uncoiled to the ground, silver flechettes tied to the end of its length, glinting. The tiny blades flayed flesh from the ringmaster's wrist. His cane clattered away, the crystal bouncing down first as if it was too heavy for the law of physics. The Breed was bleeding, gushes of thin black ichor flooding from the holes I'd put in his tough shell. The roaches swarmed him,
the pinpricks of red on their back dividing as they multiplied. The fabric of reality bowed around him in concentric circles. The little insects burst, shells puffing into sick green smoke as they hit the dust. The ringmaster shouldered his way up out of the curls of vapor, his eyes dripping pumpkin hellfire. I remained on one knee.
If he leaps for me, my chances are better here, where I'm centered and have some clear space.
I stayed where I was, gun in my right hand and whip in the other. Saul was to one side, ready to fight, but staying out of the way.
Just where he should be.
I spun towards the gaunt silver trailer.
That's coming from inside.
I uncoiled, etheric force pulling through the scar. I cleared the busted stairs and the ringmaster in one leap. Landing on my toes with my center of gravity pulled up high and tight, I plunged into the trailer. A pale shape lay on the frosty shelf bed, seizure bowing it up into a hoop.
Oh, fuck!
It was the hostage. And just as I reached the side of the bed, the traitor stopped shaking.
Icarus!
The hostage was dying, and if he shuffled off the mortal coil now, we were looking at a seriously fucked up situation. I dropped the whip and shoved the gun back in its holster. My hellbreed strong right hand closed around Icarus's throat, and I braced myself, knees on either side of his narrow ribcage.
Oh, no you don't! Ugh!
I ripped the leather wrist cuff free, one of the buckles breaking, and tossed it aside. A razor-barbed mass of etheric energy pooled in my palm. It slammed through the traitor's body. The air turned hard and dark. Something alien pressing through the fabric of reality, hovering over the twisting body on the bed. Pushed, the sea urchin spikes of my aura dappling the inside of the trailer with aqueous light. The sudden welter of sensory overload from the scars unveiling crested over me. My skin suddenly came alive, and my nose was full of a complicated tangle of scents. Tears welled up hot and hard, my eyes coping with a sudden onslaught, every crack and wrinkle in the world visible. As the traitor hostage twitched and convulsed again, his collar spikes bit my skin. I shook, the force of whatever was torturing the traitor giving me a short, hard punch in the solar plexus. It tasted like lit up liquor fumes and hit the back of my throat, then roared past me like a barreling freight train. My free left hand jabbed up, two fingers snapping out, lined with twisting sorceress flame. Banefire burned blue, and there was no hell taint for it to catch hold of. The thing struggling to come through hit me hard in the face. My head snapped aside. The blood exploded from my mouth and nose in a bright gush, splashing against the trailer wall.
So, Banefire's not gonna work.
Icarus surged underneath me again, his body moving in weird angled jumps, like his bones were trying to turn themselves into rubbery corkscrews.
God damn it, what the hell is going on here?
Fortunately, Banefire wasn't the only trick up my sleeve. Intuition meshed with recent memory. As Icarus screamed, so did I, our twine voices rising as my fingers tightened. The collar spikes dragged at the meat of my wrist and forearm again. I pushed with every ounce of sorceress strength I could dredge up in an entirely different direction, as if I was exercising him. The pressure built, excruciating heat behind my bulging eyeballs and under my stomach. Icarus, like me, took in a huge lungful of blessed, sweet air. Then my apprentice ring gave another twinging pull. He began to thrash with inhuman strength, but without the corkscrewing weirdness. The thing hovering over him burst in a gush of green smoke and chittering legs. The roaches swarmed, falling out of a point in thin air directly above us. The roaches vanished as they peppered us. More sickly pea soup smoke eddied and billowed, and the traitor surged up.
Whoa! Shit! Oh, this goddamn kid has a lot of pep for someone who was just being sorcerously strangled a few seconds before.
But I had the upper hand. My booted foot had one of his wrists in a trice. I ground down in a simple flexing movement with the steel-shod heel. The collar slashed even more cruelly at my wrist, but I ignored the pain rolling up my arm, hot blood slicking my grip on the hostage's throat.
Settle the fuck down! Settle down! I'm trying to help!
His blue eyes rolled like a terrified horse's. I kept watching him, loosening my fingers by increments.
Keep back, dammit!
The commotion outside the trailer managed to get me off the bed, shaking out my right hand. Blood flew, dripping down from my scored wrist.
I'm glad none of the blessed silver spikes touched the scar. I've had silver against the hellbreed kiss once before, and I have no fucking desire to repeat that experience.
Icaros lay on the tangled bed. His eyes closed heavily, and he curled into a ball as I backed away. He was naked, and old burn scars traveled up both legs, clasping his buttocks with angry rope fingers. I scooped up my whip as I strode through the trailer, kicking up a tide of candy wrappers. The green smoke began to thin, and the empty cockroach shells were vanishing around me. As I reached the busted door to the trailer, I could see that the stairs were indeed shattered. Saul crouched in front of them, one hand braced on the dusty earth. He was just on the edge of shifting. I didn't blame him, because gathered in a loose semicircle, pressing close in an arc of sharp teeth and hellfire glowing eyes, were Hellbreed and traitors. The ringmaster hooked his cane up with one clawed hand, the crystal spitting spark after agonized green spark, and his entire tattered costume swimming and dripping black ichor. The silver residue was poisoning him.
Ooh, that's gonna hurt as it heals. Let's hope it doesn't make him crazier than he already is.
I cleared leather, pointed the gun up to the sky.
Good evening, everyone! Seems someone has a bit of a grudge against your hostage. I just saved his life. Anyone have a problem with that?
There's a definite proportion of this job that is just plain theater.
The little bitches don't take you seriously unless you act the part.
I used to think Mikhail enjoyed the acting, but then I figured out he was really a fan of getting the job done in the shortest amount of time so he could move on to the next. It just goes more efficiently with the right proportion of fuck you posturing. I swept the front of their ranks with my gun again, then hopped down, avoiding the broken steps. Saul quivered with readiness. The ringmaster straightened slowly. Half his face was peppered with threads of damage. The black spikes of hair covering his head were plastered down, and thin, foul-smelling ichor dripped. Little threads of white smoke curled up when the droplets hit the dust. He hobbled forward.
Our hostage still lives.
Watch him, Jill. He's a tricky little bastard. Of course he does. He ends up dead, and I have to kill every motherfucking last one of you. What the fuck are you up to out here? And where's Perry?
I do not answer to you.
Wrong answer, Hellspawn. This is my town. You do answer to me. I am not having my city fucked up because you guys brought bad business with you.
You blame this on us?
The ringmaster actually bristled, his hair standing up in ichor stiffened spikes, his skin turning mottled, and pinpricks of the shape underneath poking out through the skin. Each hole I'd torn in his shell ran with diseased orange foxfire. Suddenly, an elegantly manicured hand closed around his shoulder. It squeezed, grinding. Perry pushed the ringmaster down, the thin breed's knees folding until they hit the dirt. Perry's eyes glowed gas flame blue, a deep indigo ink stain threading through the whites.
Of course she blames you. I must confess, I'm halfway to blaming you myself, brother.
The assembled breed and traders drew away in a single coordinated movement. Perry twisted his wrist slightly and ground his fingers in. It was a slight movement and didn't look like much unless you know how horribly, hurtfully strong Hellbreed are. I had shot the ringmaster in that shoulder, and I was suddenly sure Perry was grinding the silver jacket bullet, or whatever was left of it after it mushroomed in Hellbreed flesh, in deeper.
Let me be exquisitely clear, Henri. Our hunter will follow this attack to its source, if that source connects with you in any way. If this is a bid for domination or spoliation of my territory, I will be exceedingly displeased. Do you understand me, Carrion?
Ah!
A hot, acidic pucker flashed across the scar, but I kept the gun steady. Saul's shoulders were rigidly straight, and I suddenly wished I was in front of him. He was between me and the whole fuckload of breed and traders, and some of them were eyeing him instead of watching Perry and their boss.
Just be cool, Jill. No need to sweat anything.
I asked you a question, Henri.
You've made yourself clear.
That's very good. Kiss?
Don't call me that, goddammit.
It took an effort of will to lower the gun.
Something was definitely attacking the hostage.
So I gathered. Who is the offender, Avenging One?
Don't know yet. I'm fairly sure it wasn't Breed, though.
My words had the intended effect. Everyone, including Saul, and he had to twist halfway around in his lean, easy crouch, stared at me. Harry let go of the ringmaster, who crumpled and caught himself on hands and knees.
You are certain of this, Hunter?
Fairly certain. Last time I checked, Hellspawn don't use voodoo. Any reason why someone on the side of the Loa would have a hard-on for a Cirque de Charnoux hostage?
If the silence before was glassy, the silence that followed was molasses thick.
Oops. Excuse me.
I dug for my pager, every nerve alert. The number on the pager was familiar, and my intuition tingled.
Huh.
I replaced the pager in its padded pocket.
Where were we?
Voodoo?
Yeah, voodoo. As in the Loa taking an interest in this, or someone who has enough credit with them to make a trader uncomfortable.
Nobody wants to tell me why anyone would have a grudge against the Cirque? Or why there were roaches crawling all over your sorcerously being strangled hostage not 5 minutes ago? Or something about this murder I'm supposed to be looking into? English! Good old-fashioned American English! None of this tong shit.
They were saying that one of the performers has been murdered. We shall examine the evidence.
We? Wait a second. First things first.
Who died? Who found the body? And who had the last contact with the victim?
It was amazing to watch them move like quicksilver away from one tall male trader who hunched, his eyes grown round and desperate. He wore a straw hat and suspenders and looked vaguely familiar in the way all blonde, dark-eyed men with ferret faces do. You know the type. The narrow-eyed, unreliably handsome, and just waiting to slip a thin knife between your ribs and twist type.
Yeah, that kind.
Especially in a frayed, worn linen button-down and a pair of gray pinstripe trousers that wouldn't have looked out of place on an Edwardian dandy. The flat shine of traitor on his irises looked weird for a moment, like two silver pennies.
And just who are you?
The trader snatched at his hat, his silken thatch of hair damp with sweat. I suspected he'd look vaguely pretty in daylight, but here in the dim, shifting light, the pointed jaw became strong, and his wide cheekbones merely masculine instead of pugnacious.
What is this? Hellbreed don't usually trade with someone so flawed. And traders usually bargain for beauty as well as weird body mods. This guy must have something else to recommend him. Smarts. Or viciousness.
Oh, dear heavens. Were you a joke?
No, sir. Just a carny. I'm Troy. Helene's talker. Helene's talker.
Helene? Breed or traitor?
Breed. You would have enjoyed it, Kiss.
Enjoyed what? No, actually, I don't even want to know. You were the last person to see the victim?
Yes.
All right, show me.
And what do you want done with Henri here? He will survive the night if you let him. Unless the hostage is attacked again.
What a lovely thought, Perry. Thanks. Leave him alone. I've just gotten used to his ugly face. I'd hate to have someone new to deal with.